The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
It is a 9 till noon show and it's Michaela Clark in this morning for Greg Hughes. We have our Friday panel kicking off the show very shortly and much more to come. We'll also be answering all your legal questions with Seamus Gunn, solicitor, coming up after 10 o'clock. And we'll have some live music in studio after 11. So all that to look forward to, and you can join in any of today's discussions by calling 07491 25000 or texting or WhatsApping 086 60 25000. Alternatively, you can email comments at highlandradio.com. Now it's time to get the show underway, and joining me for a review of the week in news is Anna Gallagher, Donegal Town Mayor. Good morning to you, Anna.
Good morning, Michaela. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. And we also have Christy Galligan, former Garda Sergeant. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
And last but not least, John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune.
Morning, Michaela.
How are you this morning, John?
Wet and windy, actually.
Yeah, I just had a peek out the window there and it looks horrible at the minute.
I was just out walking the dog there for half an hour.
Right, well, you got the steps in already.
Lashing rain.
So farmers this week have been arguing that the government needs to realise that high food prices is now the new normal. Is this something you would agree with, John, that we need to accept this as consumers as well?
We have very few options at the moment because, you know, for about the past 20 years, all foodstuffs have remained quite stable. But the Ukraine war saw huge increases in the price of oil and that kind of thing. But farmers have bigger issues. They have the nitrates directive to try and cope with before the end of this year. They have a new CAP deal coming down the tracks. They have the Mercosur deal. We're going to be eating Brazilian beef this time next year or maybe before it. Overall, farmers, there's about 133 to 135,000 of them. They've had a good year. Prices have been very, very good. But the reason for that is that stock numbers across the circular sector and indeed across the dairy sector, and this is very worrying, numbers are falling because in many instances, the input costs, and farming is now literally a one-man job. You employ contractors a lot of the time. But overall, farming costs have gone through the roof, and farmers never had a ceiling under their prices and probably never will do. The cost of food is up probably 6 to 7%, maybe 8% in the past year. National herds are way, way down, both in circular and in dairy. So like that's telling his own story. I think the question was posed, are they getting enough money? Mm-hmm. They're not getting enough money from the EU. Our EU money has gone down. Like, we're a net contributor to the EU now by a fair long way. We contribute about $3.5 billion and we get back about 1.5. So there's a deficit there of about $2 billion that we have to pay. Whereas back 10 years ago, we were probably a net, and we had a net income of $2 billion from it. So it's all of those issues that are around there. We look at the prices of milk, we look at the prices of foodstuffs, generally across the supermarket aisles. The prices are not being reflected in at the farm gate, if you know what I mean. Market prices are very, very high. And I suppose this...
Yeah, and the farmer, you mentioned there that it's not being reflected at the farm gate. So, you know, we're paying more for food. The farmers aren't getting enough support. And I suppose that is the reality that whenever they've issued this warning now, that they can't sustain this any longer.
No, they can't sustain it because... rule of thumb is that the farm gate gets about a third of the production cost. The rest goes to the producers, the factories and the big supermarket chains who do the whole distribution network of it. But one of the big issues that we have approaching us this year is the nitrates directive, and that's the stocking rate and the fertiliser rate per hectare. And we just keep it as simple as that on a Friday morning because not everybody's farming listening to us, you know. Before the end of this year, the nitrates directive is going to be adjudicated upon. It could easily disappear It's at 220 now. The European stocking rate is about 170. Those are simple figures. It just means you have less stock on your land, you have less production, and you have less output, and you have less reason to remain in farming. It's almost as simple as that, Michaela.
Mm-hmm. And Christy, do you think that the government should have prepared farmers more for this? They should have taken the cost of living crisis that people are going through into consideration and kind of taken an overall approach to this?
Yeah, I think there are some of the comments made recently by some of those involved in the ICNSA and the Irish Creamery Milk suppliers said that there was a kind of ignorance on behalf of the politicians in relation to the costs that farmers have to absorb with increased costs in producing food out of their own pockets. But in October there, during Budget 2025, there was a number of incentives or provisions for funding for the schemes for 2025, and there was quite a number where they increased the circular supports from to 75 euros a head. They had a number of other schemes like the acres schemes, which to given the decision to accept 55,000 participants into the agricultural climate rural environment schemes, the funding of 60 million was allocated. There were many other measures brought in by the government, mm-hmm. as opposed to shore up what farmers are not getting and the supports that you once got from the EU as well. But we have to go back to this cost of living measure. Yes, prices have gone up. We're living in a world of uncertainty at the present moment in time. With Trump in America, the issue of tariffs, we don't know what he's going to do day by day. It's a huge time of uncertainty. I agree with John. There's a lot of other things that are coming into play, like the nitrates, mm-hmm. The measures that have to be worked out. We have the Mercosur deal, all of those things. And then you have the war in Ukraine, which has cost an added cost, not just to the consumers, but also to farmers as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of things in play at the present moment in time, but we see the price of, say, the cost of a pound of butter has gone up by 1 euro, and also in relation to cheese and bread and other staple mm-hmm. foods that families need, they're all going up in price. And how we can then the outlay in relation to for farmers in relation to suckler cows or beef farmers, and you know the general run of scheme and farms, it's, you know, they're basically making a basic wage. A lot of these, if you're a small farmer, you're making a very minimal wage.
It's as if the farmers are being taken for granted. You know,
yes,
we need the food. It's as if the government's saying to them, you're just going to have to suck up the costs.
You're just going to have to suffer. But I think that's ignorance on behalf mm-hmm. of those politicians and government at the time. I mean, I know there was a lot of measures brought in the 2025 budget to help farmers, including sheep farmers and things. But I think at the end of the day, there is a cost at the end of the day of producing food. There's a very little paid, you know, to the producers as opposed to what the large consortiums like Tesco and others get for the food that they sell mm-hmm. at the time. So there's a disparity there. So I think that, all in all, I mean, I think we're going down a road where costs will increase. Again, going back to the uncertainty with Trump and the White House, with tariffs and everything else that could come into play,
yeah,
that will increase the cost for people and for farmers.
And Anna, yourself, have you noticed an increase in your groceries, or how do you feel about if we're being forced to eat Brazilian beef now going forward?
Well, absolutely. I actually spoke to a couple of farmers yesterday when I knew I was coming on, and I grew up on a farm myself, and you can see the knock-on effect and how frustrated the farmers are. They want to produce good quality products, and that squeeze is always coming on, that their product, as you've said, isn't being valued, isn't being recognised. And yeah, do people want to be eating beef that has travelled halfway across the world to get here? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. And like that's what we're facing. And speaking to the farmers yesterday, what the two gentlemen in front of me have said, like the beef, even like the amount of dosing, dip, diesel, veterinary bills, fertilizer, everything that the farmer needs to use to get their product to the table, everything has increased, even like down to their feed stuff, and even the land has increased as well, even to buy land. And you look around Donegal, especially rural Donegal, where most of these farmers have to have another job to sustain their income, that they do it for the love of farming. And I asked one farmer, do you think you'll be the last in your generation now to farm? And he said, absolutely. He says, you know, I'm 60 plus now, and don't see my children having an interest, because there's not enough gain. There's not enough. You can't make a living. And it is undervalued. And what they do is undervalued. Absolutely.
And it seems to be the situation. You need to have a massive farm being a huge way of going. The small farms just don't seem to be sustainable. You mentioned you grew up on a farm yourself, Anna. Is this something you've seen in the intervening years?
Well, I'd say any small farmer listening in this morning would agree. You know, yes, absolutely. I mean, it's just become, that squeeze has just become unbearable now, I think, for them at this stage. Mm-hmm. And to sustain that level of trying to get a product to market and trying to, whether it's their sheep or their beef or their dairy, it seems to be just the government and seem to be favouring the larger farms. And I think it'll become, unfortunately, a thing of the past, and that's an awful shame for the rural farmer, because they add so much and care so much, and it's keeping people living rural as well.
Yeah. John, what do you see needs to be done? You know, we talk about this as a European approach as well in terms of the nitrate derogation, but do you think there's something that could be done here locally by the Irish government in the interim?
Yeah. An awful lot of things can be done. We're not lobbying hard enough in the EU. We're not getting enough money from the EU. Farming is probably one of the most overregulated and underpaid professions in the entire EU. Frank mentioned acres there, the agro-environmental scheme. That's turned out to be quite a noose around farmers' necks. Just looking at the Farmers' Journal yesterday, there's a whole pile of farmers that still haven't got last year's payments. And every year there's more and more emphasis on farm and regulation and controls and paper filling. And they don't know where they're going to be this time next year. I think Anna mentioned there, you know, is this the last generation going to be living on the rural farm? Unfortunately, it will be, but it can't be. Yeah. The government can't allow that to happen. The Irish economy and the whole rural heartland of Ireland is entirely dependent on the farmer in every aspect. I mean, what do you do with the land? I mean, do we just let it grow back into wilderness? What does the next generation do? Like, I suppose none of us, we don't see the younger generation. There's no incentive there to take up farming. They're all, farmers are only existing, apart from the very, very big farmers in the Golden Vale. You need enough farm income, and that's a whole day's work. And you come back in the evening at 6 or 7 o'clock and begin to work at calving time and lambing time till 1, 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, because the farmer cannot afford a helper. So there's something fundamentally wrong. We were never using more food across the world. Mm-hmm. There's hunger everywhere. And our production, and this is the contradiction of it, has been curtailed by bureaucracy and red tape. I can see the issues around pollution and all this kind of thing that has to be cleared up, because if it's not, our derogation will be gone come the 1st of January next year. Yeah. At what point do we say we have enough here? There's been a fair bit of improvement done on stopping the pollution of rivers and streams and lakes. There's still a substantial amount to be done. Whether it can be done between now and Christmas time is probably not going to happen. But food prices are going to keep rising. And this is the new way, because the production costs are quite shocking, and there's going to be a scarcity of food. Yeah. And like at the end of the day, the EU has to look at farming again and try and incentivise people with programmes that they can actually read the paper on, rather than try to implement. I mean, you have more farm inspectors and more farm regulations now than you had 50 years ago. I can understand a lot of that. But one of the big emphases of the last CAP was to sort of simplify the whole bookwork and the whole methodology. I mean, As things now stand, farming is doomed unless the government comes in with something really drastic and something meaningful rather than a load of waffle and paperwork and suggestions. That's not going to work at all, because farming has been failing. I mean, there's about 133,000 left in farming on the land. It's our most important indigenous industry and always will be. But I mean, for a new generation, there's no incentive there and they're going elsewhere. A lot of them will go to agricultural college, they will get their degrees, and then the next thing they're in New Zealand or Australia, because there's no young lad of their early 20s going to take up farming as a career, because it's going to be non-productive for them.
Yeah, it's a sad reality, so it is. Now, serious questions have been raised since on the show with Greg last week, Minister of State Marian Harkin claimed that a surgical hub for Sligo was part of the programme for government. It's proved a bit difficult in the intervening days to get proper confirmation on this. Christy Galligan, do you think it's time now the Taoiseach came out and clarified this?
I think he should. I think it's one of those backroom, I call grubby deals that are made in the background. We know from experts in the field that the objective evidence from the clinical geography, patient population, that and volume day services, co-location, surgical specialities clearly showed that Letterkenny University Hospital was the optimal location. That was from Dr. Patrick McGuinness. Mm-hmm. And this kind of risks undermining the public trust in the process. And suggesting that the political deals are being made to influence healthcare decisions is very concerning, because when you talk about the need for the Letterkenny University Hospital, it is a very busy place, and we have had issues here where there was over 29 million was paid out in private hospitals in 2 years to tackle hospital waiting lists, and we have the issue here where the surgical hub or this hub has now been allocated. Now they're saying that it hasn't been finalised.
Yeah.
The deal has not been finalised yet. But this independent lobbying of these junior ministers that are in government, of independence are in government, are getting all these little backroom deals so that it'd be kept online and kept in favour with the government. And I think that's wrong. I mean, you have to look in totality where these hubs are needed, not because of some politician's need to get re-elected again.
And the Health Minister herself, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, has been very clear that she will make the decision based on data. And as you mentioned, you know, the doctors here have given her ample amount of data to base that. So it leaves her in such a difficult position. Does she follow what she believes in, or does she follow the programme for government?
Well, that's the $20 million question.
Yeah.
I mean, really, at the end of the day, it should be for the needs of looking at things objectively and listening to the experts in the field itself. Letterkenny University Hospital would be the primarily, it would be the ideal place for this hub, not Sligo, mm-hmm. as suggested by Marian and her independence. But because all of the expertise would show that this was the ideal place for it. Now, if we're going to have these backroom deals every time something comes up where something will be allocated based not on the expertise of others, but on the basis of retaining your government seat or getting favours from government, well, that's wrong.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wrong. And I'm absolutely appalled to think that would be the way these deals are done. But hey, we're living in, when it comes to politics, anything can happen.
Yeah, nobody knows.
Anna,
you live in Donegal Town yourself. What's your view on this in relation to someone who lives in an area that can avail of care in Sligo as well?
Well, absolutely. Geographically, I can avail of both. I've had all my three children delivered in Letterkenny. I suppose I'm a Donegal woman. Do I want to see things kept in Donegal? Of course I do. And I don't think it's a divide and conquer situation but as Christy said, like, the fairness to the patients and to the people that have to travel has to come in. And, you know, the government have to look at, you know, Minister Card, she did say that no final decision had been made. Do we believe, we need to believe that this is correct and that this is about fairness and safety and putting the patients first And as Christy said, not deals to get re-elected. You have to think that there has to be a moral compass here to the people that live, you know, North Donegal, out to Dunloe, out to Aran Islands, Tory. You know, like getting to Sligo for them is going to be a nightmare. So, you know, it's not about me sitting in Donegal town thinking I can avail of both. You have to think of the larger of population and what is fair and what is safe. You know, what is safe for these people, for everybody. I mean, you know, you don't want our services downgraded again, Donegal being downgraded again or left behind again. And I know we're batting that out, that ball out of the park a lot, that we're always left behind. But
it is true. And, you know, the doctors coming out have stated it is true that Donegal has been left behind on so many occasions. And, you know, the doctors taking this into their own hands now. And, you know, they
have. Rightly so, because the doctors are not wanting to get re-elected. What they're saying is the truth. What they are not coming to discuss things without the truth and without. They're the people that are dealing with patients day in, day out. They are the people that are the front line. You know, they're the people working through this system, and they know what's needed. And, you know, the minister needs to listen to the experts.
Mm-hmm. Could I interrupt there?
Yes.
In March, the regional health forum in Sligo, which was attended by Donegal County councillors, and there were quite a lot of councillors who were sitting on that regional health forum, they got an admission from the regional executive officer, Tony Calhoun, to say that it was his decision to locate the hub to Sligo. Now, was it his decision or Marion Harkin's decision? That's what I'd like to know.
And that's it. I think, you know, we understood that at the time. It was his preference that he was putting forward the case for Sligo. And then for Marion Harkin now to come out and say this, I don't want to say that they're not working together, but, you know, we don't know. Is it just a coincidence now that this is the lay of the land?
There's no such thing as coincidences.
John, what's your view on this? Do you think, you know, is this a can of worms waiting to be opened if we get confirmation that this has been included in the programme for government?
I suppose you go back a fair bit. I remember being on delegations 50 years ago as a member of the unions at St Carnell's Hospital in Letterkenny, and we were always battling, the two hospitals were always battling to get money from the national purse, and it just wasn't coming, and it still isn't. There's no point in us sitting here speculating that Letterkenny is going to get it or that they're not going to get it. Or see, it wasn't even originally on the programme for a surgical hub at all. The whole entire Northwest, we were going to be starved of it. That was a very, very late entry. And as far as I can see, Letterkenny has been left so far behind, you wonder what's going to come next. Mm-hmm. Now, yesterday was Baron Gloucester. We had at the Nervous Committee saying that there's going to be significant investment in cancer services in Letterkenny. And then it's going to take us 5 years. That is an absolute scandal, that carry on. Now, Marion Harkin didn't come on the programme last Friday to do anything but tell the truth. And fair play to her for doing that. Because the simple reality is, why would she not do a deal for Sligo? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what she was elected for.
But then she is South Donegal, so you would think she would have. I know then South Donegal, as I was referencing to Anna, you know, they a large cohort of that population would go to Sligo,
she would have a couple of thousand votes in South Donegal. There's about north of the Lahy line was always in the Sligo Hospital catchment area ever since the system was founded. But, I mean, it's just unfortunate that we are where we are. It has become highly politicised, but then at the end of the day, it's all about politics, because the deals that's done behind people's backs to form a government is something that we have no control over. That's been on a very, very long time, going back to Charlie Haughey, going back to Bertie Ahern. One of the biggest deals that was done, there's really no word about, is that the deal that Harry Blaney and Mildred Fox and Thomas Gilday and Jackie Healy-Ray got. A rough estimate, and this is going back to 97, Harry Blaney got in excess of 50 million, I would imagine. None of those deals are on a programme for government. The money is found down the back of a sofa by the finance minister kind of a week before the budget. There's always heaps of money found. How this transpires, I'm not quite sure. But there's no way that Michael Lowry went into those negotiations without getting a decent deal out of it. And he expressed his satisfaction that he was very satisfied with the what we were talking about at that point was the draft programme for government. I'm sure it didn't change very much. And I'm sure that every one of those TDs from Barry Hennigan, Jeanette O'Toole, or the Jeanette O'Toole, the whole lot of them, Noel Grealish, Sean Kenny, Boxer Moran, Marion Harkin. Marion Harkin is in politics a very, very long time. She's done three stints in the EU. A regular visitor to Donegal, she knows it inside out. We're talking about farming earlier on. Managed the deal that, or managed the plan that she left meetings here in Donegal was to bring back to Brussels, and she'd done her best to amplify them and bring them forward. So she knows exactly what she's doing. It's unfortunate that one county is pitted against the other, and you can only blame the system of government for that. Letterkenny is vastly underfunded, has been for years, but I mean, programmes for government and the formation of government is not about stats or what areas, let it be West Cavan or North Roscommon. It's about getting a stable government that's going to last for 5 years. Governments now are made to last for 5 years because politicians are all, they're all career politicians. They're there for the long run. How Donegal is going to come out of this, I wouldn't be that certain. If Sligo has been promised that somewhere has to come out in the wash. I'm not sure that it will come out in the wash this year, because the minister has taken a month now to consider all the information that she has got. It'll probably take her a month to read all the information that she's been provided with, and it's just stuck in a spin here. And the consultants, like the likes of Michael Shugrue, who has given 17 years of his life, day and night, to the oncology services at Letterkenny Hospital, surely to God, somebody somewhere must look at this and say, these people deserve a better deal, they deserve better funding, they deserve a much better, stronger infrastructure within the hospital. And we shouldn't be running down to Galway. We've all gone there and come back again, and we know the whole hassle that's with it. Because where else do we go? Dublin. Are we going to have anything closer to us? Because, like, a surgical hub is going to be, it's not going to be a hospital as such, it's going to be a day case procedure from 9 to 5. The status of it would be huge. It would help retain and help more consultants to come to Letterkenny. That's the biggest thing that it's going to do. But, I mean, Letterkenny has fallen off the chart insofar as proper funding is concerned.
But do you think then, as Christy was mentioning the backroom deals earlier, that, you know, the government is so far removed from Donegal that, you know, they're happy with these backroom deals. They're happy to give whoever wants whatever they want.
When you go into the formation of a government at the general election last November, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael came up very, very short. They needed a fairly substantial group. They needed the 8 independents from Verona Murphy down, who got the most expensive political position in the land as Ken Coria. So, like, the stakes were very, very high. There were seven TDs then. All of them, every one of them, there's going to be a price to be paid for my support, full stop. And that is politics. And no matter how you look at it, there's no point in trying to sanitise it, saying that, hey, the services come first. Before anything happens, the deal for government has to come first. And that doesn't denigrate in any way the huge amount of work that has gone in to try and get something into Donegal. But that's been a battle for half a century. It's probably been a battle since the foundation of the state, Frank. And, like, at the end of the day, it's always a battle, it's always more meetings, it's always more money. It's not that the hospital isn't making the effort, because knowing the hospital and knowing the modus operandi up there, they will now have programmes halfway finished for next year, probably some of them completely finished. But it's very disheartening that year after year that the management, the consultants and everybody else who are engaged in putting those programmes together, we get a pittance off the table. And how do we change that? I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that's, and I'll go back to yourself on this, that's the question we, you know, all ask. We elect these representatives to be our voice there in the Dáil, in the Seanad at council, but, you know, we hope that they will make the change, but again, we're in the same situation.
Like, we're in this awkward situation up here in Donegal. We have 5 TDs. Fine Gael lost their TD the last time. All that plays into it, because the formation of government is much bigger than we imagine. Because, I mean, Simon Harris and Michael Martin were sitting there just with a hot potato, because, first of all, there's a deficit there because they have excluded Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin can never get into government here because You would never think that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were two civil war parties that battered the heads of each other, 100 years ago. And at the end of the day, to exclude one party is discrimination. Mm. There's no reason that Sinn Féin, with their 37, 38 TDs, shouldn't be part of those negotiations. But whatever the mentality is in Leinster House, it can be anybody and everybody, but it cannot be Sinn Féin. And that is discrimination. That's but where that starts.
If we can go back to the hub here, there was over 4,926 inpatient day cases that were outsourced between 2020 and 2025 at a cost of $29 million. National Treatment Purchase Fund paid out $29 million of that money to private hospitals in 2 years. Now, if you look at the overall aspect, I know what John's talking about. Politics comes first,
yeah,
and unfortunately, everything else comes second. But sadly, in this instant, we have now once again been left high and dry. Even with all the representation we have here in Donegal, we've been left high and dry once again. And it's unfortunate. I mean,
after an election in November last year, and now we're facing this situation. Does it question, who are we voting for? What, is the government going to do for us?
Well, I mean, that's the point. I'm sorry to cut across anybody here, but the point is that, as John has alluded to, you can imagine travelling from Malin to Galway for treatment in Galway or Dublin. That's a long journey. For anybody who's travelled on a bus, and I've spoken to bus drivers who have travelled with patients to Galway, waited for them to come back to Donegal, that's a long day. Why isn't surgical hubs? Why don't we have one here in Donegal? It's a huge demographic. It's a huge area to cover. And anybody who knows Donegal knows it's a large area itself. And it looks after quite a considerable number of people as well. And the Kenny University Hospital is at a breaking point at the best of times when it comes to day services or anything else, or inpatient or accident emergency. So, I mean, the government have to look in totality, not just because of their programme for government. They have to look at totality.
There was a quote as well there from Dr. Patrick McGuinness. The decision must be based on clinical evidence and patient need and not political horse trading.
Yeah. And I think they have provided that, Anna, but I suppose that's the issue now.
The doctors, and I think that letter that went out with 171 signatures of very highly qualified people that are dealing with patients, they have to be seen and they have to be listened to, because if they go ahead and go against, I think the time has for everybody to start lobbying and emailing and getting on to their representatives, because there has been a joint effort across all political parties to try and move this political, to try and get our medical hub in Letterkenny. But I think, we're voting the same thing again and again and again. So you're going to get the same results again and again and again. So I suppose we have to be mindful too how we vote, and we have to sort of get our voices heard and start lobbying your local representatives, because the quieter we stay, the more these deals just slide through.
But there has been such.
What do you do, Anna?
Because there has been such a campaign, you mentioned the doctors there, the Oireachtas members are united on this. But if it's in the programme for government, they effectively can't overturn this.
I don't believe it's in the programme for government per se. None of these deals that are done ever end up on the programme for government, but they end up being created. I firmly believe that Marion Harkin has achieved that goal of getting the hub for Sligo. The question is, why don't we get one as well? If Marion Harkin had been up here in North East Donegal and part of Lowry's team, and Lowry carries massive clout, being an independent TD in Tipperary, if Marion Harkin was working on this side of the divide, she would have got a hub for Donegal. We would be arguing then, should Sligo have got a hub as well? You could say, well, why not? We are so isolated up here, and we're falling behind all the time. Our population is growing, and we're finding it more and more difficult to find consultants to work in Letterkenny, given that it has that name of being underfunded, and who wants to work there? it should be a situation that Letterkenny should be a vibrant, thriving hospital with literally all the consultants' posts filled and doing a whole pile of procedures that we now have to go to Galway for, go to Dublin for. I mean, the latest one that I'm hearing is now that some of those hospitals are prepared to book you in overnight to a hotel or somewhere else. To think that you're going to leave Malin Head or Fannin Head at 3 o'clock in the morning. You have to stay in accommodation.
Or in a hotel, sir.
We've all made that run to Galway. I did that 9 years ago for prostate surgery. And it is a nightmare coming home because you will leave hospital in a much worse position than you could ever imagine. You're not on the road 5 minutes till you need to have another pee and another pee, and it takes about 8 hours to get home. Mm. You see, this is the country that we're living in here. The system of government, and Anna talked there very well about the whole idea. Have we not a voice here? We have a voice at election time. Last November was our lowest ever turnout. And, you know, when you see that, Dawn, it's almost taken as inevitable that the two parties, the two civil war parties, are going to be back in situ, and that whatever they can pick up along the way to make up the numbers, they're going to go for that. And they have a very strong government now, and I don't see any break or any changes to it. And we are the losers. Unfortunately, we are the losers, and there's no point in papering over the cracks, and there's no point in talking that we should have got this and we should have got that. We elected 5 TDs, as we continue to do. As I said, I think maybe in this programme the last time I was on, Michaela, is that the permanent government now, the Baird and Glosters and all these Secretaries General, ever since the property crash, they were given much, much more power to ensure it wouldn't happen again. The permanent secretaries have a huge role. They're responsible to ensuring that the amounts allocated are properly spent, and they're also answerable to the Dáil. But overall, they are calling the shots, and nobody else. And I mean, until we get our heads around that there and get away from the situation where the permanent secretaries have so much power, we're in trouble, and in very big trouble.
Welcome back to Friday's 9 till noon show. Now, earlier this week, the government announced a possible €1,000 hike in student fees. However, they seem tight-lipped as to whether it will be returning to €3,000 and have said that a decision will be part of the upcoming budget. And I'm going to come to you first on this. What's your view on this?
Me?
Anna.
Oh, sorry. well, look, at who wants another hike? I mean, parents are pushed to the limit already with things that we've already covered there: medical expenses, groceries, diesel, electricity costs, home bills, insurance hikes. I've just paid my own car insurance and road tax. I have two children at university. I have another one in secondary school. Absolutely. I mean, here we go again. It's just another, like, local property tax. It's just another form of getting more money out of you. And we're trying our best to educate our wains, try and keep them in this country. And unfortunately, it's going back to when I was being educated myself. There seems to be that brain drain again. We're educating them and they're heading off to Australia, and Canada seems to be a new destination for them. I have a lot of children that I would have put through myself at school and saw them head off now, and they're leaving and they're going off and taking their good education with them. And other countries are having the privilege of having our young people and their education.
And if your children were heading to college, I'm not sure what year they're in, but if they were starting college this year, and, you know, the fees were €2,000 previously, but you were being faced now with this extra €1,000, would it be a deal breaker?
Look, it's a deal breaker for a lot of people. So I can't, you know, I mean, everybody's financial situation is their own business. And you know, on a personal note, I knew this day was coming, and I saved hard as well. And I was in a fortunate position that I could save to make sure that the kids were educated. Not everybody's in that position. I put away children's allowance and I tried my best to take money from here than there, because I knew this day was coming. But I was in a privileged position. My husband, God rest him, he was a guard, and we worked hard, the two of us, and we reared our children. And look, I'm in a position where I was able to put a bit of money aside and save, but that is not the case for everybody.
But so many students are doing this on their own.
Yeah. You know, and it's very discouraging because everybody has a right to go and have their third level education and to be told, you know, how heartbreaking is that for parents to say, look, you know, you can't go or we can't afford it. I mean, rents have increased as well. I mean, the money to pay for rent as well is massive, let alone keep your child and maintain your child while they're trying to get through third level education. So look, again, yeah, another failure to our young people again to try and put another levy of €1,000 onto their education.
And Christy,
when we're trying to keep them here as well.
Christy, we've talked so much about the cost of living today. We were chatting earlier about the food prices, but this measure to reduce the fees to €2,000 was a cost of living measure. Now it's going up to €3,000 again, but the cost of living hasn't decreased by €1,000.
No, it hasn't. And unfortunately, we were well aware that this reset was going to happen, the government have, you know, on top of everything else, I agree with Anna, on top of everything else that's going on at the present moment in time, the cost of living and all of the things that we've discussed, this is another added burden to a family as well. I mean, I know, speaking to, put on my own children through colleges, the cost of putting child through college and the cost of rent and all of that. And I know from speaking to my own family members for their sons and daughters as well, the cost. And this added extra cost, when you are budgeting for everything else in your own household budget, that you add another extra €1,000 onto that. And look, we know what's going to happen down the road with what's going on in the world at the present moment, the global tensions, tariffs and everything else. There is going to be constant increasing costs on everything down the road as we speak. And that's another added, not incentive, but it's another added difficulty that we have. Now, I know the government will turn around and say, look, we have to pay for A, B and C and we're trying to balance the books here. But at the end of the day, this is another thing that is not needed, not wanted by anyone, especially the people who are young people who have the added cost. If you're going to Dublin, the cost of rent in Dublin is just
travel expenses,
it's out of this
everything.
World in Galway.
And you know, it's funny too, it was quoted that Simon Harris did say that he would actually like the goal of the government to bring student fees to zero.
And now I think that's what people did believe.
Is that
so they
zero
were happy
is another
with
way
that?
Not taking them off, I'll tell you.
I know. And Christy, you know, we talk so much about we need more doctors, we need more teachers, but the reality is now, you know, people might not be able to afford to put themselves through college. You know, you and Anna talked about, you know, helping your children through college, but there's so many out there that go this alone.
Yeah, I know that you'll get people who are on a very marginal incomes and things that might be subsidised in some shape or form to get into college, and there's different ways of getting yourself through college through different form of undergraduate or postgraduate degrees and whatever. But the difficulty here is it's the increasing costs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just the cost of going to college, it's the other costs that go with college. I mean, you have to feed yourself. I mean, the students have to feed themselves. That money has to come out of somewhere. They have to then pay for the rent and all of the other ancillary items that they have to pay for at the end of the day. That's a increasing cost on parents at the end of the day. And where does that money come from? So you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, really, at the end of the day. You've budgeted for certain things this year. Now there's an extra €1,000 added on. Now we don't know what else at the end of this year could be added on, and other items like fuel, etc. And as we spoke about the cost of living. So all of this adds up to the end of the day. How are these young people going to be able to afford to go to college? Are we de-incentivising them from going to college? Is there some way that this can be looked at in a more holistic way than the way it's just about pounds, shillings and pence, as we say, you know?
And John, the government, as Anna did mention there, did promise to reduce student fees. We see it now being hiked by €1,000. Is this another empty promise from government, or is it something like the delivery of a surgical hub, if it were to come to Donegal, is years down the line as well?
You know, Michaela, you're 100% right. The government spent two budgets buying the electorate to win the last election. They made a very poor fist of it, but they established a fiscal council in the aftermath of the property crash to control the amount of government money that was being spent. Now, this is a government appointed body. It's an oversight body that should be adhered to, and they have a 5% limit that they should not go beyond. It's going to be reckoned now, come budget day, that we'll have doubled that amount up to about 11%. So there's a huge issue there.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, the budget is now being framed against a background of negativity. We're waiting for next week's declarations from Donald Trump. Are we going to be lucky enough to be left with a 10% tariff? Now, that's going to hit everything. Mm-hmm. As it now stands, it's a temporary tariff. But that tariff will be on top of, we're already paying a 4 to 4.5% tariff on goods leaving the EU for the United States. So you're sitting there in business with a profit margin of 6 or 7%, that's going to be wiped out, and it'll cost jobs all over the place. Now, we also have to look at things. We have a public service of 425,000 people working. That's costing us $33 billion. There's probably a time where we need a root and branch review of all government spending, and including what kind of performance-related delivery from it. The energy credits and all of these kind of things will be gone for the next budget. We will not have that. Like, the budget is shaping up. I mean, we had figures now for the corporation tax this week, which isn't bad at all. We will get away reasonably likely with very little increases this year. It's next year that those will begin to hit, and until then, we'll have to keep our fingers crossed. But we're not going to get the same kind of handouts, all the double payments and all this kind of thing. That's going to impact low-income families very severely at Christmas and into the new year. That will not be happening. Mm. All because the government has been very feeble in managing the economy. If you can buy the election with a couple of percentage of increases to your total, and you get 43%, and you need another 7% to make up the government, you're paying a very hefty price for that. And I don't think that's good enough. Like, at the end of the day, the system of government is here to stay. It's a very feeble system. It's just not serving us right, because those who need it most are getting the least. Mm-hmm. That has never been other. Young mothers, old age pensioners living alone in the middle of winter time, they have not fared all that well in recent budgets, when they should have been getting €25 instead of 12. Their cost of living has gone up incrementally, probably a lot more so, because they're paying taxes and they're doing all these kind of things. The whole system of government won't change because you have the same parties doing the same things and getting the same results all over the shop. And it's not that, like, we spent about 100, country has cost about 125 billion this year. It's probably 5 billion more than we should have been spending. But those who needed the money most in the last two budgets just simply did not get it. Just read the social justice barometers and all of those things. And I don't see that changing in the next 20
and
years.
That's a very frightening thought for people listening to us today, but we promise that there's a lot of positives out there as well. That's where we have to leave it today. Thanks so much to Anna Gallagher, Donegal Town Mayor, Christy Galligan, former Garda Sergeant, and John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.